hit single, Baby One More Time, moved her squarely into the realm of sexuality. The single was released in 1998 and immediately jumped to the top of the charts. The lyrics are suggestive enough. Oh baby, baby, the reason I breathe is you. Boy, you got me blinded. Oh pretty baby, there's nothing that I wouldn't do. When I'm not with you, I lose my mind. Give me a sign, hit me baby one more time. The video became especially popular and controversial. It depicts Spears dressed in a Catholic school uniform, with shirt knotted to reveal belly and typically short skirt. The Lolita-style video, which Britney thought up herself, prompted her to defend the semi-pedophilic content. All I did was tie up my shirt. I'm wearing a sports bra under it. Sure, I'm wearing thigh highs, but kids wear those. It's the style. Have you seen MTV? All those girls in thongs? No word on whether Spears has heard of kiddie porn. By the end of 1999, over 10 million copies of Baby One More Time had been sold. And Britney had posed in her 90s for Rolling Stone at the tender age of 17. Still clinging to her younger audience, Britney maintained that she was happy as a role model, and implied that she was pure as the driven snow. You want to be a good example for kids out there and not do something stupid, Spears told Rolling Stone. Kids have low self-esteem, and then peer pressures come and they go into a wrong crowd. That's when all the bad stuff starts happening. Just a few months later, she reiterated to Rolling Stone that she had really strong morals, and just because I look sexy on the cover of Rolling Stone doesn't mean I'm a naughty girl. Her virginity was intact as well, and she stated unequivocally that she wanted to wait until marriage to have sex. If I did anything else, it would be a mistake, one I would regret forever. According to associates, Spears made the comment to provide support for girls feeling pressured to give sex to boyfriends. While simulating sex on stage with dancers and posing for kiddie porn for Rolling Stone, Spears insisted that she wasn't a sex seller. That's the edgiest I've ever been. But it was Rolling Stone, and it has an adult audience. The photographer explained to me what he wanted to do, and I was cool about it. But it's so not me at all. I was playing a part, acting, and I don't regret doing it at all. Spears' 2000 follow-up album, To Baby One More Time, was the chart-smashing Oops, I Did It Again. Again, the content centered on sex. Lyrics from the title number contained this famous line, Oops, you think I'm in love, that I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent. She wasn't. Indeed, at this point, Spears and her management apparently decided to leave any semblance of traditional morality behind. By May 2000, Britney had told an Australian interviewer that her favorite sexual position was on top and had posed again for Rolling Stone, this time clad in an American flag top, with the caption, Britney wants you. The American Family Association called for a ban on her music, noting a disturbing mix of childhood innocence and adult sexuality. This is the clear danger of the pop tarts. They drag their audiences from cooing their songs to imitating their dress to miming their behavior to living the lifestyle they espouse. Britney was also recanting her desire to be a role model, explaining, I don't like to be thought of as a role model. I'm human. I make mistakes like everybody else. I just try to be the best person I can be for me. When I make a mistake, I usually don't end up on the cover of Rolling Stone in my underwear. Neither does anyone else I know. By this point, Spears' career and lifestyle had been a series of hedonistic adventures, leading the New York Times to brand her the postmodern virgin whore. A quick 55-hour marriage, a few music videos glamorizing anonymous sex, a few more MTV appearances. Over the past 2 years, Spears has become Madonna Lite. Like Aguilera, Spears' music has tended toward depressing nihilism as well. In one of her latest music videos, she even commits suicide. Amorality isn't a recipe for happiness, but Spears fans keep on buying. Her popularity has hardly waned among preteens and teenage girls. As a Washington Post reporter wrote, Britney popularized the slut strut in music videos assembled by a former porn director and single-handedly wiped out the Spice Girls. Short skirts became known as Britney skirts. Young girls grabbed teen people off the newsstands when Britney was on the cover, packed Britney lookalike contests and Britney concerts. There's also Britney on sunglasses, handbags, belly button rings, video games, and of course, singing Pepsi's Joy of Cola. Last year, according to news reports, the Britney empire made more than $100 million U.S., more than the Tiger Woods machine. Is this what America means by girl power? It's important for parents to keep tabs on their children's role models before those role models mature. Parents are continuing to buy into the cleanliness of Disney Channel stars Pop-Tarts like Hilary Duff and Lindsay Lohan, but each is busily transitioning from a role model to a Madonna look-alike. Duff sounds eerily like a young Spears or Aguilera when she claims, "I think that I'm pretty straightforward, and I'm an honest person. And if people look up to that because I'm just being myself, then that's cool. I don't necessarily feel like I have to break away or get out of this type of genre that people have put me in. I do think that I'm growing, and my music, especially on this second album that's coming out, is more mature, but not so mature that it's beyond that younger audience. Because I do know that I have that younger audience." Duff's first album, Metamorphosis, sold more copies than Madonna's and Spears' last CDs combined. Lohan, who turned 18 in 2004, started off doing family fare like the charming The Parent Trap and the funny Freaky Friday. Her most recent projects have included Mean Girls and Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen. There's only one problem. As Rolling Stone describes it, there comes a time in the life of every teenage girl who works for the Disney Corp when that girl realizes she has suddenly, how shall we phrase this, broadened her appeal. Lohan has appeared at various clubs with the Hilton sisters, drinking and smoking, as well as wearing low-cut dresses to show her newly acquired breasts, a topic that's received a gratuitous amount of discussion time among porn generation men. As the Chicago Sun-Times correctly commented, "We're still not sure if they're real or not, but Lindsay is giving us plenty of opportunity to observe them." Shortly after turning 18, an event tracked and greeted enthusiastically by dozens of websites run by young men, Lohan posed sexily for the cover of Rolling Stone. The caption read, "Hot, ready, and legal." This is a common porn technique. Pornographers often use stars barely over the legal age and then pose them as young girls. If this sort of behavior doesn't constitute pedophilia, it certainly promotes it. For more mature audiences. Among older teenagers, Britney and Christina are generally eschewed in favor of alternative rock. The floozy sexuality of pop music and early rock leads to greater and greater nihilism in more mature rock music. As Harvard Law student Chris Craig, 25, says, "I think some of the older bands put out non-nihilistic stuff. The jaded, nihilistic music is the product of the younger bands." Alice, a 23-year-old student at Harvard Law, agreed. "It's not cool to be happy. If you're too happy, you're looked at as illegitimate." Dr. Joan Shapiro, no relation to author, a practicing psychiatrist for 3 decades, summed up the situation. "Jadedness is the cool thing to do. Their peers are jaded. The media suggests that that's kind of what cool kids do. To fit in with their peers, kids are ultimate conformists, particularly adolescents." The undisputed king of nihilism-glorifying alternative rock is now deceased Kurt Cobain, lead singer for Nirvana. Cobain glorified the apathetic teenager and the existentialist lifestyle. The title of one of his songs says it all: "I hate myself and want to die." The voice of the lonely, existential teenager found its outlet in Nirvana, the 1990s icons that were self-absorbed to the point of complete despair. Nirvana's anthem, "The Best Rock Song in Years, Smells Like Teen Spirit," is an ode to nihilism and narcissism. Its dark, dingy melody growls out at the listener. Cobain follows suit, yelling at the audience, "Here we are now, entertain us. I feel stupid and contagious. Here we are now, entertain us. A mulatto, an albino, a mosquito, my libido." Yeah. The nonsensical Gertrude Stein-esque lyrics confuse and distance, and that's what they're meant to do. The universe is a random place and we're stuck in it. Cobain re-emphasizes this just seconds later, gnarling, and I forget just what it takes. And yet I guess it makes me smile. I found it hard. It's hard to find. Oh well, whatever. Never mind. If the world is too hard to figure out, you might as well just give up. The good news is, you get to form your own subjective system of morality. Anything goes. In Stay Away, another Nirvana hit, Cobain screams, have to have poison skin, stay away. God is gay, burn the flag. God is dead, and Nirvana put the stake through his homosexual heart. In Cobain's own view, the past was a record of failure, and there was no point in trying to rectify it. I like to complain and do nothing to make things better, he once stated. At the same time, Cobain wasn't satisfied with his generation. My generation's apathy, I'm disgusted with it, he famously complained. Following this worldview to its logical end, Cobain blew his own brains out with a shotgun. Nirvana spawned a whole host of imitators, and the dark and dingy became the mainstream. The most extreme branch of nihilistic rock is the heavy metal goth genre. Rock musicians rail against the very notion of a benevolent god, finding solace in rebellion in siding with satanic imagery and messages. They take moral darkness to a whole new level. As DJ Mark Shannon told me, heavy metal's direction is controlled, no, dictated, by the need to increase the shock value of it, just as Hollywood has done in the movies. The problem, by the time it's gone too far, it's too late to stop it. And we've already passed that point several times. Ozzy Osbourne, one of the more heralded members of this genre, once headlined the founding band of the heavy metal genre, Black Sabbath, spewing songs with pagan lyrics that ridiculed morality. Now, after landing a vaunted television show on MTV, wherein the brain-fried former rock star babbles nonsensically to the enjoyment of his audience, Osbourne is a mainstream figure. In May 2002, Osbourne appeared at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, to the delight of reporters and politicians alike. Even President Bush paid homage to the mass murderer of morals, joking, the thing about Ozzy is, he's made a lot of big hit recordings. Party with the Animals, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, Facing Hell, Black Skies, and Bloodbath in Paradise. Ozzy, Mom loves your stuff. Just over 2 years later, Osbourne would repay the favor by comparing Bush to Hitler during Ozfest, a heavy metal festival. Osbourne's heirs include Marilyn Manson and morally repugnant bands like Slayer, Rob Zombie, Nine Inch Nails, Rammstein, KMFDM, and Korn, sometimes classified as goth or death metal bands, but the more accurate term is pagan. Manson, who named himself by combining the names of Marilyn Monroe and serial killer Charles Manson, is deep into a stylized form of Satanism, proclaiming himself Antichrist superstar. His hatred for religion is monumental. In his The Reflecting God, he christens himself a god and then states, "When I'm God, everyone dies." In Britain, one of his fans murdered a teenage girl after being influenced by the macabre work of Manson. Manson actively opposes anything that even hints of morality. Take, for instance, his ode to degradation, cake and sodomy. I am the god of F. I am the god of F. Virgins sold in quantity, herded by heredity. Redneck burnout Midwest mind, who said date rape isn't kind? Porno nation evaluation. What's this, time for segregation? Libido, libido fascination. Too much oral defecation. White trash, get down on your knees. Time for cake and sodomy. Manson finishes with a slap at the religious. Cash in hand and dick on screen. Who said God was ever clean? Bible belt round Anglo waist, putting sinners in their place. Yeah, right, great, if you're so good, explain the S stains on your face. Manson's replacement religion? You guessed it, sex. I memorize the words to the porno movies. It's the only thing I want to believe. I memorize the words to the porno movies. This is a new religion to me. He groans in Slut Garden. As of 1999, the average teenager listened to 10,500 hours of rock music during the years between 7th and 12th grades. It's no surprise that today's teens feel abandoned, adrift in a sea of uncertainty and meaninglessness. As Mary Eberstadt of the Hoover Institution states, "If yesterday's rock was the music of abandon, today's is that of abandonment." The odd truth about contemporary teenage music, the characteristic that most separates it from what has gone before, is its compulsive insistence on the damage wrought by broken homes, family dysfunction, checked out parents, and especially absent fathers. Baby boomers and their music rebelled against parents because they were parents, nurturing, attentive, and overly present, as those teenagers often saw it, authority figures. Today's teenagers and their music rebel against parents because they are not parents, not nurturing, not attentive, and often not even there. Whereas oversexed pedophilia chic dominates pop music, boredom and jadedness are the hallmarks of teenage thought. Everything sucks, bites, or blows. Even if you like something, you're not supposed to get too excited about it, because nothing really means anything. We're the generation of NM, internet speak for nothing much, and whatever. We're the generation of I don't care. As Kurt Cobain sang, "Oh well, whatever, never mind." Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam fame summed up the situation nicely in a 1994 interview. "Think about it, man. Any generation that would pick Kurt or me as its spokesman, that must be a pretty effed up generation, don't you think?" The fantasy world. Music stars, regardless of genre, employ sex to sell their product. Whether it's the porn star stage dancers at a Kid Rock show, or the dancing Lolitas of the pop circuit. But it's not just the audience that feels the effects of exploitation. Sometimes, even the pop stars themselves realize how morally and spiritually corrupt they have become. In January 2004, Laura Sessions Stepp of the Washington Post wrote a piece entitled, "Partway Gay? For some teen girls, sexual preference is a shifting concept. Move over Ellen DeGeneres and make way for the younger girls. Way younger, actually, and way different from what most people think of as lesbians. These girls pack Annie DeFranco concerts and know Tattoo lyrics by heart." For many readers, one question immediately arose: who the hell was Tattoo? Tattoo was a Russian pop group, two teen girls, in fact, who acted as though they were in deep lesbian love. The name of the group meant "this girl loves that girl" in Russian slang. The group opened its doors for business when the girls, Yulia and Lena, were 14 and 15 respectively. They kissed and simulated sexual activity on stage and in music videos. They spoke about the enjoyment of lesbianism. In 2003, their single, "All the Things She Said," racked up 13 million sales worldwide. Tattoo sold a pedophilic notion of young girls making out. The band's manager, Ivan Shapovalov, admitted that his idea for the band originated while surfing the net and discovering the plethora of kiddie porn websites. The pair claimed to have sex three times a day. Their management claimed that the pair insisted on a double bed in hotel rooms. The girls managed to avoid explaining which way they swung, and Shapovalov continued to rake it in. Everything began to crumble in 2004 when one of the girls, Yulia, became pregnant by her married lover. It turns out that Yulia had already had one abortion the previous year in order to prevent public awareness of her heterosexuality. She also became suicidal, explaining, "I have such thoughts that I want to die." Lena, her musical partner, says she feels disgusted by the way she acted. "I felt so bad about it for a long time. I realized that the time would come to pay for everything you've done in your life, and I now want to redeem my sins. I go to church all the time. I tell the priest everything about Tattoo, and he tries to help me. He blesses me. I feel I am absolutely talentless. I am leaving show business." These gained international celebrity, but lost their innocence. They convinced thousands of young girls that lesbianism was normal, or at least valuable for titillating men. They helped define deviancy down and promote a live-and-let-live world, and they destroyed themselves. Tattoo is the logical culmination of the Pop-Tart mentality. Do anything to sell an album. Use your authority as a role model to model behavior that would make a hooker blush. Push the boundaries. Teach young girls that true strength is in bucking old-fashioned social convention. Yet teach them simultaneously to cater to the most perverse form of male sexual fantasy. In short, undermine traditional morality. But be careful how far you push things, since it's all about the cash and parents are the ones with the wallets. Lucky for the Pop-Tarts that millions of parents spend less time worrying about what their kids listen to and watch than whether they should order their latte with non-fat or soy milk. Britney Spears is a morally repugnant piece of work, but she's right about one thing. It's a fantasy world that I'm doing. It's up to the parents to explain that to their children.
Chapter 5. Where Pimps and Hoes Run Free. The new trend today is depravity. Brooklyn rapper Mos Def. John Kerry finds rap music fascinating. At least that's what the Massachusetts senator and Democratic 2004 presidential candidate told MTV's Gideon Yago in a blatant attempt to pander to the black vote. I don't always like, but I'm interested. I mean, I never was into heavy metal. I didn't really like it, Kerry said. I'm fascinated by rap and by hip-hop. I think there's a lot of poetry in it. There's a lot of anger, a lot of social energy in it. And I think you'd better listen to it pretty carefully, because it's important. Believability has never been Kerry's strong point. As columnist Mark Stein wryly noted, reckon if you bust into his pad and riffled through his and Teresa's CD collection, you'd find a single rap album? While Kerry was bothered by rap lyrics advocating cop killing, and felt that sometimes some lyrics in some songs have stepped over what I consider to be a reasonable line, he refused to advocate government censorship of such lyrics. Hey, if anyone knows what it's like to be held down by the man, it's John F. Kerry. He had to bus a few caps in Vietnam, you know, to protect the brothers and all. Kerry's is the politically correct view of rap, where the music is a reflection of the street and a reflection of life. We live in a world of multiculturalism and diversity, where every culture supposedly has its own material to contribute to the giant collage that is America. What pompous, wrong-thinking person would refuse to honor the gangsta art form for its beauty, Kerry and his ideological brethren imply, or treat it as anything less than our modern-day Gershwin or Sinatra? That's easy. Someone who understands that this gangsta art form is crap. There's no other way to put it. The overwhelming bulk of rap music has no artistic value, and nearly every rap song has a negative social value. The gangsta culture embodied by rappers and their posses is not worthy of imitation or even exposure. It demeans women, degrades sex, and glorifies criminal behavior. To portray rap as vital to black culture, as Kerry did, is a subtle form of racism. It assumes that violence and misogyny are integral to the black lifestyle. They aren't. Black culture has contributed hugely to American society. The civil rights movement brought meaning to American notions of equality and freedom. Black contributions to politics, science, music, and art have helped enrich all of us. To demean these accomplishments and contributions by listing rap among them is to demean black culture as a whole. Even the Reverend Al Sharpton made that very point during his presidential campaign, stating that the music is desecrating our culture, it is desecrating our race. Civil rights marchers didn't march so that a rapper has the right to call your mama a hoe, he told a black business group in Richmond. Truthfully, Kerry probably had no idea what he was talking about. I wonder if Senator Kerry could name even one rap song he finds enlightening. A solitary cut that illuminates life as it is.
Maybe he meant Hotel, a single by Cassidy and accused child pornographer R. Kelly, which hit number 5 on Billboard's Hot Rap Tracks list the week of Carrie's appearance on MTV.
Girl, you wanna come to my hotel, baby. I will leave you my room key. I'm feeling the way you carry yourself, girl, and I wanna get with you 'cause you's a cutie. Well, if Mammy is with it, then Mammy can give it, then. Mammy a rider. I'ma slide up beside her. I got a suite you can creep on through. I know you trying to get your freak on too. I'll do it all for that lady. Yeah, I ball for that lady. Hit the mall for that lady. Keep it fly for them ladies. Keep my eye on them ladies. Hot tub for them ladies. Pop bub for them ladies. I got love for my ladies, yeah. I'm feeling the social energy, Senator. But maybe I'm being unfair. Let's try 2004's Billboard leading rap single, Lean Back, by the aptly named Terror Squad. I don't give a F about your faults or mishappenings. Nigga, we from the Bronx, New York. S happens. Kids clappin' love to spark the place. Half the niggas in the squad got a scar on their face. It's a cold world and this is ice. Half a mil for the charm, nigga, this is life.
Other assorted curse words include multiple S's, a faggot, and one mo effers.
Now this is more down Senator Carey's alley. It's a reflection of street life, wherein life sucks and crime is the only way. Now that we've listened, can we call the cops on these social degenerates? Stick with rap master B-Shap for just a bit longer. Here's Billboard's number 3 hot rap single for 2004. This one's called Freak a Leak by P.D. Pablo. How you like it, daddy? Would you do it from the front? How you like it, daddy? Can you take it from the back? How you like it, daddy? Fine, break it down like that. How you like it, daddy? 24, 34, 46, good and thick, and once you get it, she'll work with it. Pretty face and some cute lips, earring in her tongue, and she know what to do with it. And she know why she came here, and she know where her clothes supposed to be, off and over there. Sniff a little coke, take a little X, smoke a little weed, drink a little bit. I need a girl that I can freak with. Wanna try S, and ain't scared of a big dick. And love to get her P licked by another B, 'cause I ain't drunk enough to do that. This verse, by the way, was broadcast live from the MTV Video Music Awards. Because of that horrific FCC censorship Senator Carey condemns, the audience heard a series of silences where the lyrics call for obscenity. It isn't as if Petey ain't willing to give a hoe some good clean fun in return. Tell me what you want. Do you want it missionary with your feet crammed into the headboard? Do you want it from the back with your face in the pillow so you can yell it loud as you want to? Do you want it on the floor? Do you want it on the chair? Do you want it over here? Do you want it over there? Do you want it in your P? Do you want it in your A? I'll give you anything you can handle. Petey sounds like the kind of young man a girl would want to bring home to father. That is, if her father is a drug-dealing ex-con who gets his kicks from stringing out schoolgirls and then pimping them out to his friends. On the other hand, I'm grateful to Senator Carey for having pointed out to me the social utility of these songs. P.D. Pablo is the Black Byron. Terror Squad is Urban Tennyson. Cassidy and R. Kelly are the Walt Whitmans of Da Hood. The importance of these lyrics is surpassed only by Winston Churchill's Iron Curtain speech in the pantheon of important social statements of the last century. Censorship of this sparkling artistry would be the equivalent of banning Renoir. The sad part is, this kind of language isn't even the most extreme. It's the mainstream. Literally millions of children are hearing this kind of garbage every day. Almost 25% of CDs sold in the U.S. in 2003 was hip-hop or R&B. Hip-hop is the second biggest music genre, according to the Recording Industry Association of America. You can't pull up at a stoplight anymore without hearing a booming subwoofer thumping with the sound vibrations of rap. The rap culture is a real cancer for the black community. According to Professor Edmund Gordon of Yale and Columbia, and chairman of the National Task Force on Minority High Achievement, Many black males have adopted the culture of the rappers they see on music videos and are neglecting their academic performance in order to perform rap and hip-hop. Rapper Chuck D of Public Enemy told students at UCLA, "At the end of the hood is jail and death, and we're going to put it to music? That's vile." A June 2003 survey by Black America's Political Action Committee, BAMPAC, found that 52% of black voters believe rap music is a negative influence on children, and 60% would support banning minors from buying sexually explicit music. The rap constituency crosses racial lines as well. SoundScan, a sales tracking company, estimated that 70% of rap music consumers are white kids from the suburbs. The rap culture has infested the porn generation, through and through, regardless of ethnicity. As Lori Price of the Dallas Morning News writes, we, I'll say, since I'm a black hip-hop fan, demanded that non-blacks taste the raw rhythmic style and Ebonic-infused, misogynistic lyrics of rap music. Accept this art form as legitimate, with its ugly epithets for women. Drink in its culture, which includes daily use of the N-word. Mainstream society accepted the invitation with a vengeance, to the point that some white fans and artists are using the same language and copying the same attitude. Walk into any high school in the United States and you can see teenagers, black, white, Hispanic, whatever, in baggy pants, doing the pimp role. They imitate the dress style and the bad grammar, using phrases like "fo shizzle my nizzle." The common high school greeting is "sup, biatch." These are ridiculously stupid phrases, popularized by criminal, thug, rapper, actor Snoop Dogg. Here's Snoop Dogg's explanation of his babblings. "Fo shizzle." This has many different meanings. It means for real, for sure. I'll use it in a sentence to let you better understand. Check this out. "Doggy fizzle televizzle is gonna be off the hizzle for shizzle." "Thanks, Mr. Dogg. That clears everything up." David Letterman put it best. "I have no idea what the fizzuck I'm talking about." Celebrating the dregs of society. One of the most important record labels in rap was Death Row Records. Responsible for the rise of rappers Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, and Tupac Shakur, the Death Row logo depicts a blindfolded black man strapped into an electric chair. The logo is emblematic of the sometimes fictional, sometimes all too real track of the rap industry. Thugs rap, get famous, make money, and then kill someone or are murdered. Of course, it isn't the criminal justice system or the media giving rappers a bad name. It's the fact that they're criminals. Rap is an art form more appropriate to the prison yard than the schoolyard. Snoop Dogg, the most famous rapper on earth, stood trial for the murder of 20-year-old Philip Waldemariam. He's also a former pornographer and a longtime druggie. Tupac Shakur was murdered after being convicted of sexual assault. Shakur's rapping rival, Notorious B.I.G., aka Biggie Smalls, was also murdered. Death Row Records founder Suge Knight associated openly with the brutal Bloods gang in Los Angeles. Known for mixing business with violence, Knight is a convicted felon. Bad Boy Entertainment founder Sean Puffy Combs, aka P. Diddy, was arrested in December 1999 and charged with gun possession and bribery. Victims testified that Combs had shot them, although Combs was acquitted of all charges, with the help of his attorney, the late Johnny Cochran. Those criminals, rappers, who are dead are often heralded as saints in the rap world and beyond. Tupac Shakur became the subject of an obsequious documentary, Tupac Resurrection. Already the most posthumously marketed music celebrity since Elvis and Jimmy, rap star Tupac Shakur gets perhaps the definitive, authorized portrait come sanctification treatment, Variety wrote. The Hollywood Reporter lauded the movie, saying that it was so full of his passion for life that it plays not as a grievous saga, but an anthemic, inspiring example, however bittersweet. And praising Shakur's unwavering fury over injustice, Michael Medved commented cuttingly on the canonization of Shakur. His puzzling posthumous popularity reflects the degrading and ultimately racist notion that criminal violence represents an essential and authentic element of African-American identity. Rap is inextricably linked to thuggery. We're not talking about a series of troubled artists who contributed great art to society while fighting their own demons. We're talking about a bunch of thugs who talk about their thuggery for money. As the Boondocks creator Aaron Magruder states, "The gangsta image has ingrained itself so deeply into the youth culture that it just became taken for granted. It's about living the life you can live once you've committed all these horrible crimes. They're thugs with regard to violence, and they're thugs with regard to women. Make as much money as you can and have as much sex as humanly possible," explains Consuela Francis, assistant professor of African American literature at the College of Charleston. "Sex is never an expression of love, but instead an expression of lust, with rappers acting as though they're dogs in heat. In the rap view, women are all bitches and hoes, and men are pimps. It's a repulsively misogynistic view, and one that affects both boys and girls. Boys learn that it's okay to treat women like dirt. These contemporary buffoons, vulgarians, and misogynists are defined as the purest black young men, the ones who are keeping it real," in the words of New York Daily News columnist Stanley Crouch. "Girls learn that boys want strippers and prostitutes and act accordingly. Women are defining themselves in reaction to what men want, rather than what they want," says Touré, pop culture correspondent for CNN. "The most popular rappers on earth are misogynists. Chart-topping rapper Ludacris raps dirty in area codes. I've got hoes in different area codes. I just pick up the mother F phone and dial. I got my condoms in a big-ass sack. I'm slagging this D like a new jack, biatch." 50 Cent, who won several New Artist Awards for his first album, has several songs focused on sex. In Candy Shop, a sex-obsessed tune which spent more than 6 weeks as America's number one music video on MTV, he intones to his prostitute girlfriend, "I take you to the candy shop. I'll let you lick the lollipop. Go ahead, girl, don't you stop. Keep going till you hit the spot. I'll break it down for you now, baby, it's simple. If you be a nympho, I'll be a nympho. Got the magic stick, I'm the love doctor. Have your friends teasing you about how sprung I gotcha. I'm trying to explain, baby, the best way I can. I melt in your mouth, girl, not in your hands." Rapper Nelly, one of the most famous artists of his genre, has songs entitled Pimp Juice, She Only Want Me for My Pimp Juice, Thicky Thick Girls, Looking Like a Lollipop Waiting for the Lick Girl, Rap Sumden, Weed Is Actually a Medicine for Me, You Know, and Though Dem Rappas, F a B and Some Clothes, I Gotta Get Rich, Go Platinum and Do Shows, among many others. For this wonderful contribution to society, Nelly won Favorite Male Singer at the 2004 Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards. Yes, he's a kid-friendly scumbucket. Essence, the most popular black women's magazine in the country, finally let loose with its frustration over the horrific depiction of women in rap in its January 2005 issue. The editors wrote, "We are mothers, sisters, daughters, and lovers of hip-hop. And today we stand at the forefront of popular culture, independent, talented, and comfortable with the skin we're in. We are really feeling ourselves. Perhaps that's why we're so alarmed at the imbalance in the depiction of our sexuality and character in music. In videos, we are bikini-clad sisters gyrating around fully clothed grinning brothers like Vegas strippers on meth. When we search for ourselves in music lyrics, mixtapes, and DVDs, and on the pages of hip-hop magazines, we only seem to find our bare breasts and butts. The damage of this imbalanced portrayal of black women is impossible to measure. An entire generation of black girls are being raised on these narrow images, and as the messages and images are broadcast globally, they have become the lens through which the world now sees us. This cannot continue." Of course, when confronted with female rage, male rappers claim that the demands of the marketplace give them license to do whatever they will. Ludacris protested his innocence to Essence. "I don't mean to depict women in a certain way. The ones who want to shake what their mama gave them are going to do that whether they're in videos or not. As artists, we explore our creativity through videos. Who sees those videos on BET, or whatever music channel is showing it, is not always up to us. Similarly, Nelly refused to take any blame for his portrayal of women. I accept my role and my freedom as an artist. I respect women, and I'm not a misogynist. I'm an artist. Hip-hop videos are art and entertainment. If a bad childhood is no excuse for awful behavior, neither is a willing market. There's no doubt that there are plenty of druggies willing to buy cocaine through dealers, but that doesn't make dealers morally blameless. Rappers need to get over their obsession with their own genitals and start working on changing their perverse views of women. Or there's no end to the damage this destructive culture can create. The Wiggers. Nobody white would be allowed to get away with selling such a product, wrote New York Daily News columnist Stanley Crouch about the vulgarity and misogyny of rap. It's about time we started seeing some equality. Well, we're starting to see some equality. This time, it's the white community doing for equality in rap what the feminist community did for equality in sex. The standards have been lowered for everybody. Deviancy has been defined down. Young white men are so eager to take part in the rush toward musical and moral oblivion that they've begun imitating the gangsta lifestyle. Such suburban yuppies turned brothers are often termed wiggers, white niggers. Seriously, the clothes, the caps, the do-rags. I'm told some whites even prefer to use black hair products, like Afro Sheen and Murray's pomade, because it controls their tresses more securely than products intended for naturally straight hair. Details Askia Muhammad of the Washington Informer. At my Orthodox Jewish high school, many of my classmates knew scores of rap lyrics by heart. There is very little on this planet weirder than watching a white suburban kid driving an SUV, putting on a bad nigga accent, pumping up the subwoofer until the car shakes, and then walking into school to study Hebrew. The closest these teens will ever come to pimps and hoes is watching Pretty Woman, and the closest they'll ever come to busting a cap will be paintball. Kyle Jones, a white suburbanite from Newton, Massachusetts, told Fox News, "I don't want you to see me as that I'm trying to be black, or I'm trying to be, like, too hard, or I'm a white kid. I just want you to see me as me." He then proceeded to rap for the camera. Adam Schneider of Great Neck, New York, explained, "It's what I am. I can relate to it. I know exactly what they're saying. It's just what it is." The New York Times ran a 6,597-word piece on one wigger who had to battle his inner white demons. The piece is worth reading simply for its tragicomic quality. Billy Wimsatt was 27, still clinging to the hip-hop life, sniffled the Times. He didn't look terribly hip-hop, and not because he was white. He was balding and brainy-looking, with an average build and an exuberant nature. Like many young hip-hop heads, he regarded hip-hop with its appeal to whites and blacks as a bold modern hope to ease some of the abrasiveness between the races. Wimsatt even penned a piece for the hip-hop magazine The Source, critiquing wiggers for diluting the hip-hop culture. "Yes, Billy Wimsatt seemed about as authentically hip-hop as a white guy could get," said the Times. But the Times concluded, "As you got older, holding on to your hip-hop values seemed a lot harder if you were white." So why are white teenagers picking up the six stylings of rap? Selwyn Hinz, editor of The Source, elucidates the issue. "Black culture has always been the well of coolness. You know, if you wanted to be cool, if you wanted to be perceived as cool, you would always grab, you know, your cup and run to that well and take a drink. And in the last 20 years, that well of coolness has been hip-hop. But what is cool about heavy syncopation, lack of melody and harmony, and perverse lyrics? White kids embrace hip-hop because it's got fat beats, yes," posits Knight Ridder writer Jim Walsh. "But it also distances them from their parents, and in some sense, serves as a rejection of their parents' culture and their race itself." Like no generation before it, the hip-hop generation recognizes that identity crisis as its own. It is the first generation to live and breathe diversity and multiculturalism, not just study it. There is a big difference between multiculturalism and the old American concept of the melting pot.
Multiculturalism is a social or educational theory that encourages interest in many cultures within a society,
rather than in only a mainstream culture, according to the American Heritage Dictionary. And it's a dangerous theory. It promotes moral relativism by pretending that all different cultures are equally legitimate and therefore should remain completely distinct. It says that anyone who joins the mainstream has sold out his roots. Multiculturalism, combined with the sharp focus on the wrongs done by the white community to American blacks, encourages white kids to hate their heritage, and mainstream culture by extension. Rap culture provides an attractive alternative for rebellion in its hatred of mainstream culture, its focus on sex and violence, and its preening arrogance. There are plenty of people who are pleased that young white people have begun to imitate the sick inner-city culture. Dan DeLuca of the Philadelphia Inquirer says, "With so many hip-hop heroes living large, rapping in the dream lives of white, black, Latino, Asian, and other kids, it stands to reason that the shared culture will have its impact. Slowly, surely, incrementally, a change is bound to come. What's good for hip-hop is what's good for America." Chris Cuomo of Fox News stated on Fox Files, "It seems black has never been more beautiful to white suburban teenagers." Many intellectuals love the rap culture. It is anti-establishment and poetic, and has the romance of revolution about it. Professor Cornel West of Harvard University, who has done little of note in the past few years except to record his own rap CD, sees rap as the raw reflection of black life in America, according to the Washington Post. Halefu Osumare, a dance professor who taught Power Moves, hip-hop culture at Bowling Green State University, called rap contemporary poetry. Really poignant stories, even if couched in misogyny and gangsterism. Full-fledged college courses on rap and hip-hop abound at highly ranked universities around the country.
That it has reached the level of academic study is more proof of hip-hop's mainstream arrival, notes Andrew Guy Jr. of the Houston Chronicle.
These people shouldn't be too enthusiastic about white crossover to rap. White kids are picking up the worst of rap culture and coming away with the false impression that it actually represents mainstream black America. And as the Wigger market grows, Wigger hip-hoppers have risen to the forefront of American music. They're no kinder or milder than their black counterparts. Eminem, possibly the most despicable lyricist on the scene today, has parroted gangster rappers to the tune of millions. His song, Kill You, speaks about murdering and raping various women, including his mother. "Ah, slut, you think I won't choke no whore, till the vocal cords don't work in her throat no more. Ah, put your hands down, bitch, I ain't gonna shoot you. I'ma pull you to this bullet and put it through you. Ah, shut up, slut, you're causing too much chaos. Just bend over and take it like a slut, okay, ma? Oh, now he's raping his own mother, abusing a whore, snorting coke, and we gave him the Rolling Stone cover. You g-damn right, bitch, and now it's too late, I'm triple platinum." In a way, Eminem is right. His status as a rap star means that he's allowed to get away with anything. He scrolls down a list of women he'd be okay with slaughtering, and ends with this comforting line, "Ha ha ha, I'm just playing, ladies. You know I love you. It's all tongue-in-cheek, you see, just like Jack the Ripper loved prostitutes." Another track on the same album, Kim, contains an explicit play-by-play description of Eminem cutting his girlfriend's jugular. "Ha, go ahead, yell. Here, I'll scream with you. Ah, somebody help. Don't you get it, B? No one can hear you. Now shut the F up and get what's coming to you. You were supposed to love me. Kim choking. Now bleed, bitch bleed, bleed, bitch bleed, bleed. This guy belongs in a nut house, not in a recording studio. Instead, his rhythmically psychopathic CD, the Marshall Mathers LP, sold 9.7 million copies. The album also won a Grammy Award for Best Rap Album of 2000. In 2002, Eminem starred in the hit film 8 Mile, which grossed over $100 million. Eminem's success is by and large considered a barometer for rap in general. Even the wimps of the white community are buying into the rap rage. Justin Timberlake, the former Mickey Mouse Club kid, a guy about as white as Senator Robert Byrd, has found his inner gangsta as well, even aside from treating Janet Jackson like a hoe at the Super Bowl. He's turned from a boy toy into a hard-edged urban black culture imitator, putting him more in the realm of rap than of pop. The Times of London labels Timberlake a walking clothes horse for black urban chic. Boz Dresinger of the LA Weekly calls Timberlake a wigger du jour. Timberlake was even tapped to host the ABC TV special Motown 45, raising the hackles of some in the black community. The only question left is which one of these white artists will go black first. Clay Aiken, Wayne Newton, Elton John, or Michael Jackson. Playa haters. While cultural conservatives continue to speak out against rap, the battle seems all but lost. A spokesman for Sprite tells the Wall Street Journal that rap is the leader in terms of influencing pop culture today. Shoe companies and cell phone makers employ many of these same rappers as part of their marketing campaigns. The NFL and NBA both utilize the rap culture to sell product. Even Major League Baseball has joined in. Oxford's English Dictionary now includes an entry for bling bling, a hip-hop term for big jewelry. With the growth of hip-hop, can cultural conservatives win the big battles of the future if they alienate rap consumers? After Senator Kerry's silly statements about rap on MTV, he received a cacophony of catcalls from cultural conservatives. Look, it's one thing to say you like it, but to try to pass this off as something you've intellectually examined and assigned value to, sorry, Senator, said an incredulous Rush Limbaugh. Doesn't Kerry recognize what so much of rap music is today? Profane, sex-obsessed, selfish, greedy. In sum, the opposite of public-spirited, asked media critic Brent Bozell. The cultural left immediately responded by claiming that Republicans were old-fashioned, behind the times, and bound to lose votes because of it. The animosity of culture warriors like Limbaugh could make it extremely difficult for the GOP to court young voters, warned Salon.com columnist Eric Bolaire. When it comes to politics, Republicans have to take hip-hop seriously, nodded Bakari Kitwana, author of Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop. Rush Limbaugh is like those guys who used to smash Elvis Presley records in the 1950s and said rock and roll has no importance. They're just throwback people. And when you attack rap, you're not just attacking the performer, but you're attacking the audience, the majority of which is white, sneered David Bocetus of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies in Washington.
Even some Republicans were wary of turning off the young rap fans.
There's no reason to perceive the Republican Party as being anti-rap or anti-hip-hop, claimed Republican National Committee spokesperson Mary Ellen Grant. We're reaching out far and wide to youth voters, regardless of their musical preference. There's no underestimating the popularity of hip-hop. Rap has functionally become the driving musical genre for the porn generation. Yet as attractive as it might seem to swim with the rap culture tide for demographic reasons alone, conservatives have no choice but to swim upstream. No, rap is not inherently rotten. It doesn't have to contain vulgarity, misogyny, and brutal violence. You could easily put the words of President Bush's State of the Union address to a funky syncopated beat and call it rap. But there's simply no way to co-opt the gangster rap culture that now defines hip-hop into anything that functions as a positive element in society. Chapter 6. Teeny Boppers. Benjamin Franklin said that the two things you can always count on are death and taxes. I am tempted to add, you can also count on lots of boy-related articles to appear in just about any teen magazine. Karen Bockram, editor, Girls Life magazine. Time for a quiz. This quiz has two parts. First, see if you can name the ages of the girls who submitted the following questions to advice columnists. Then, see if you can guess the advice an adult gave to these troubled females. To make it fair, we'll make this a multiple-choice test. 1. My boyfriend isn't affectionate. We've only kissed once in 7 months, 3 months ago. I'm miserable with him, but I know I'm going to be miserable without him. What do I do? A. Stop basing your relationship on physicality. B. Maybe the guy has manners, respect his beliefs. C. Before ending it, try to kiss him. D. Where the hell are your parents? 2. I've been developing feelings for one of my girlfriends. Thing is, I'm a girl too. I want to tell her, but I fear she doesn't feel the same way and our friendship will be ruined. Plus, students at school will harass me. I've already been teased for liking a girl. A. Sexuality is amorphous at your age. Confusion is natural. Ask your parents what they think and about seeing a psychologist. B. Have respect for the feelings of the other girl. While you are confused about your sexuality, thrusting those confusions onto another girl is wrong. C. I hate that I can't flat out tell you to go for it. Join your school's gay-straight alliance or find a local gay community center. You need more non-judgmental people in your life. D. Where in the fiery flames of hell are your parents? 3. Is it wrong that every time I think a celebrity or a guy at school is hot, I imagine myself having sex with him? Am I perverted? A. Those kinds of feelings are natural, but perhaps you need to focus more on your studies and extracurricular activities, and less on boys. B. Feelings are unpredictable, but as moral human beings, we can still try to control our thoughts and actions. C. Of course you're not perverted. Think away. D. Where in the roasting, toasting pit of hell are your parents? Okay, time's up. Put down your pencils and get ready for the answers. The writer of question number 1 is Lauren, 14, from Columbiana, Ohio. The actual advice she received was C. The columnist added, not to make light of this, but 3 months is a long time to go without a follow-up move. Nothing says that guys are solely responsible for hooking up. Question 2 was from Michelle, 15, of Mississauga, Ontario. And yes, you guessed it, C represents the given advice. Explained the columnist. The possibility of ruining the friendship is high, whether you're gay or straight. But sadly, the world is a homophobic place, and the stakes are higher in your situation. There's a chance your friend will get weirded out and tell people, and they might make fun of you again. But if it's worth the risk, there are options. Mention that you know a girl who's interested in her female friend. If she doesn't freak, it's a good sign. Question 3 was from Trina, 14, Brooklyn, New York. Again, she received C in response to her question. Each of these questions was submitted to the publication YM, aka Your Magazine. YM, according to the New York Times Almanac 2004, had over 2.2 million subscribers as of 2002, making it the 32nd largest magazine in the country. Other teen magazines also have gargantuan subscriber lists. 17 had over 2.4 million subscribers as of 2002, number 27 overall. Teen People had 1.6 million subscribers, number 48. Cosmo Girl had over 1 million, number 83. That's over 7.2 million subscribers total, from those magazines alone. That doesn't count smaller mags like Teen, L Girl, J14, Girls Life, or Teen Vogue. The magazine's subscribers are teenage girls, and their parents are buying them subscriptions. These magazines obsess about boys, looks, and celebrities. The teen magazines function as gateway products both for porn-light publications like Cosmopolitan and celeb gossip magazines like People. As Kathy Flanagan of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel puts it, sex has always been a marketing tool, but who knew it would be used to sell magazines to kids as young as 12?